Thanks for tuning in. Welcome to episode 10 of the CooperCast, the fun podcast for you, the mini motoring community. I'm your host, Dale Blankenship, and we're going to have a little chat about things mini. First thing up, the new Countryman. Got a chance to see it, touch it, sit in it. Not a bad car. There's some drama going on at Mini over in the UK. Head of Mini, she's out. Her replacement's been announced. Not a whole lot of details going on. That always makes you wonder, huh? Mini Takes the States is coming up real soon. It's in July. Be here before you know it. We'll chat about Mini Takes the States a little bit. And there's some club drama on the horizon here. And since clubs are kind of a big part of the Mini community, we're going to chat about the club scene just a bit here. So all that'll be up right after this quick break. And we're back. Hey, look, so if you were at Minis on the Dragon back the 1st of May, I think it was Thursday, maybe Friday, before the monsoon rain set in anyway. Flow Mini, they usually have a 10 out there, have past few years anyway. They had one of the new Countrymen out there. I ended up missing the unveiling they had at our dealership here in Virginia Beach, Checker Flag Mini. So that was my first opportunity to actually put eyeballs on the car. And I tell you, I've seen all the hate on the Facebook groups, which, you know, we should expect that from Facebook by now, right? But I've seen all the naysayers about how big it is, and it's so ugly, and it's this, and it's that. I wanted to see it for myself. And I went there really wanting to hate this car. I've read everything, and I really, really wanted to dislike this car. But I got to tell you, I didn't. It's not a bad-looking car. You know, it doesn't look like the first-gen Countryman. Doesn't look like the second-gen Countryman. Is it bigger? Yeah, it's bigger. But if you listen to everything that Facebook world had on it, you'd have thought you were looking at a Chevy Tahoe or a Ford Expedition. It ain't that big. Again, it's bigger than the R60 Countryman that we're used to seeing, but it's not overly bigger. You know, you hear about the headlights. The headlights are hideous. They're ugly. The taillights, they look stupid. Yeah, they're different, but they don't look horrible. Personally, I have never not bought something because of the way a headlight or a taillight looks, okay? Now, being an old body shop guy and a detail shop owner now, I look at the fit and the finish of the car, and the damn thing's put together pretty nice. The gaps were good. The paint looked really good, and I'm sure this was no spectacularly different car. This was a regular production car, I'm sure. And the paint looked good, looked better than a lot of cars I see. The engine bay, it's a little weird. It looks like the engine sits down a little lower. That's because the fenders are up a little higher. It is weird being a little more conventional. The hood goes up, the headlights stay down. You actually have fenders on the car, so that's going to take a little bit of getting used to. The tailgate, the threshold getting in is a little bit high for me. I think that's maybe a problem for folks. But once you have that tailgate open, there is just plenty of room in there, so you're going to be able to haul more than you could. Our daughter had a first-gen Countryman, and I loved the little car, but there wasn't a lot of room in the back, and well, the second-gen Countryman, they were a little bigger. This is a little bit bigger going from that. And you can't say the folks don't want to buy that because the Countryman is one of the biggest selling cars Mini has, so the size surely isn't keeping anybody down from that. Now, I will say the interior, that's a little quirky for me. That big pie plate speedometer thing in there, it looks kind of toyish to me. Looks like it ought to be on one of those little Tikes, red and yellow cars that everybody's kid has. I don't know, you have a neat car with a lot of sophisticated tech in it, and this thing looks like a Frisbee stuck on the dash. If it were mounted in the dash, I don't think I'd have as much problem with it, but it's just sitting there. Like somebody said, shit, we forgot to put a Speedo in this car, and they just stuck that there. I don't think that's going to keep anybody from buying the car, and it is kind of quirky, and face it, our cars are made to be quirky. The fabric on the dash wrapping around to the door panels, that was kind of cool. This one had kind of a brown blending into a blue as you got towards the back. That was kind of neatly done. Not so sure how it's going to hold up to handprints and dirt and things like that later on. The seats were fairly comfortable. I didn't hate the seats. Sat in it, felt good. The steering wheel, you know, you could move it up and down a little bit. There's some adjustability there. I think it's going to be a pretty decent driving car. Now, I was talking to the motoring advisor. I guess they still call them motoring advisors. I need to look into that. But the sales guy that was there, and there was somebody asking him about how the car handles. And he says, well, it is a little heavier, so it rides a little softer. Well, that's just the way the car's engineered. Because some of the bigger BMW SUVs, I guarantee you they weigh more. And I've driven some of them and they stick pretty damn good. So, you know, you can't blame it just because it's bigger and heavier that it's necessarily going to handle badly. Is it going to handle like our F56s, R53s? No, it's not. But it also doesn't have to handle like a Chevy Tahoe either. So that is what that is. Now, the horsepower for the standard Cooper S All-4, 241 horses. Not terrible. Your 0 to 60 time, that's going to kick off at about 6.2. So you're not going to take it to a drag strip and launch against a 5.0 Mustang or something. But, you know, it'll merge. It'll get you on the interstate safely. And I bet it'll be a lot of fun when you get out on the highway. But here's where some of the quirky stuff comes in, and I'm not so sure this is going to be something that's all that well accepted by the enthusiasts in the group. You know, the soccer mom buying the car to tote the kids around, or just somebody buying it for a commute car, probably not going to be an issue. But for an enthusiast, I think this is going to be a red flag and a button-pushing issue, you know what I mean? So Mini USA said, look, Mini, we have the S and we have the JCW. And I know you like putting that JCW body kit on the S so it looks like a JCW, but that kind of dilutes the brand of the JCW just a little bit. So for the US market, we don't want the JCW body kit on the Countryman S. So Mini wants there to be an absolute differentiation. They want to know the Countryman S is a Countryman S and the JCW is a JCW. However, there's one big thing that I think is going to be a stumbling block for folks that really buy the car to have fun with it. Since we don't have a manual transmission available to any of us on anything anymore, the automatic, you lose the shifter paddles on the steering wheel. If you want the shifter paddles, and they're a hot button for you, you're going to have to buy a JCW. The Cooper S All-4, no shift paddles for them. And the worst part, you don't even have a shifter in the car. You have a little button. Push a button for drive, push a button for reverse. Actually, it's a little lever type thing. Now, there is a cheat code, and I'm going to put a video that the Motoring File guys did in the show notes, so look down below and check this out. There's a little cheat code that you can do to use one of the little buttons on the steering wheel to be the shifter. I think that'd be a pain in the ass myself because that little button is small and I've got arthritic hands. I don't know how well that's going to play. So if you want the shift paddles, and that's a big thing, you're going to have to jump up, spend the extra $5,000 on the JCW. Of course, that's not a total waste of money. You do get an extra 70 horsepower, that more aggressive styling on the front, a little bit neater wheels. So I can argue that it's money well spent. Another thing that's going to be a JCW exclusive, which this seems stupid to me, but nobody asked me, exhaust. You're not going to see the exhaust on anything but the JCW. Now, I know a lot of you out there, me included, love putting an aftermarket exhaust on the car and hearing it a little bit more. And the tips are important. The tips got to be shiny. They make chrome tips and they make black tips, carbon fiber tips. They make heat treated tips that are kind of colorized. Exhaust tips are a big thing. Well, you're not going to have them on anything but the JCW Mini. And that doesn't matter if we're talking about the Countryman or the Cooper. Remember, the hatchback now is called just the Mini Cooper, or even the new upcoming Aceman. You're not going to have a visible tailpipe on anything but the JCW versions. Now, when we talk about the new person coming in at Mini headquarters and the outgoing person that's leaving the head of Mini, I think we're going to have a little bit of discussion about the tailpipes and things along those lines there. But for right now, if you just buy a Cooper S, you're not going to see the exhaust. You're not going to have any shift paddles. I think that's a move in the wrong direction, particularly for a car it's marketed towards the enthusiast. Now, remember, though, I don't think you and me, the enthusiasts out there, are really the major people buying Minis. I think Mini is selling a lot of cars to a lot of people, and the enthusiast market is probably the very small section of that. Now, you have the Mini community where everybody loves the cars. For those of to get in it and really want to motor hard and be serious about driving the cars, I think those things are sticking points. While I was driving along out at the Dragon, I was listening to White Roof Radio. And if you haven't listened to the guys at White Roof Radio, you really need to get over and do that. They have a lot of fun. They tell a lot of tech stuff in there. I think it was Todd. Todd's from MotoringBadges.com. He summed up Mini, I kind of think, in a correct light, if you will. I'm not sure how to say that. He feels that they are trying to make Mini an appliance. They're taking the driving fun aspect out of it. It's just going to be robotic, if you will, antiseptic, possibly. You're going to push a button to start the car. You're going to flick a lever to put it in the direction you want to go. And you're just going to drive the car. I think that's a dangerous move on a car built for the enthusiast and the fun market. Go back, I don't know, 20 years and look at how the first gen Minis were marketed. You just don't see the fun marketing applied to the Mini brand today. Again, we're not the biggest part of their segment. I understand that. But there's an old saying, you don't forget the girl you took to the dance. And when it comes to Mini, the sportiness is what Mini's all about. I mean, hell, you can go buy a Kia, you can buy a Hyundai, a Nissan, whatever, and you get that boring ass car to drive around. A lot of people buy Minis because Minis are many in the heritage and the lineage they have. I will tell you this, I have reached out to several Facebook friends that have bought the new Countryman, and not a single one of them have regretted buying it. One of my friends, Wayne Whitcomb out in Missouri, he's no stranger to Minis. He's had Minis before. I think the last one I know he had was a Laurel Edition Mini convertible, little second-gen car. Sergeant Pepper was that car. So Wayne knows Minis. He's not a stranger to them at all. And he is just thoroughly taken with this new Countryman that he's got. Now, Wayne picked his little Countryman up a little bit earlier this week. It's a good-looking car. It's black, matte black stripes, got a little purple highlights on it. It is a good-looking car. And in his words, he is stoked about the car. He says with the 241 horsepower, he says it is a blast to drive. So, guys, I'm telling you, these things may not be all that bad. Yes, it may not look like your typical Mini that each one of you love and love and love. But don't poo-poo it out just because it looks different. I mean, here's a guy, and I respect Wayne's opinion because, again, he's not just some guy that's jumped in a Mini for the first time. Wayne has had Minis, and he's a Mini motorer. He deserves to be considered a Miniac for sure. So if somebody like him says he really enjoys a new car, I don't think it's all doom and gloom. May not be what we want to hear, but I think there's a little bit of hope out there. And that JCW Countryman, that bad boy might be worth looking into. Now, I guess time will tell. Maybe Mini looks at how many Countrymen they're selling. And they're saying, well, you know, the hatch isn't the big seller anymore. So maybe people are looking for the softer, cushier rides. And maybe they don't need the fun aspect of it. I think they're taking an awful lot of people's opinion for granted, maybe. I mean, you buy a Mini because you want to be different. I think when you try to be the same thing that everybody else is, you get lost in the static. I mean, face it. If you look at a mid-size, maybe a lower mid-size SUV like the Countryman is being aimed at, there's a whole lot of competition in that market. And there's very nice cars for significantly less money. So I think they're kind of treading in maybe unfamiliar waters. But having said that, that new second-gen Countryman was selling well. And it's a well-built car. And I'm telling you, this new third-gen Countryman seems like a good car, too. So only time will tell about that, I guess. Now, the Ace Man's coming up. They are actually going to build the Ace Man. And the Ace Man internally, even though the external side of the car is smaller, fairly smaller than what the Countryman is, but it's actually more room in the front seat of the Ace Man than it is in the Countryman. And there's actually more headroom in the new Ace Man than it is in the Countryman. So, you know, they've done a good job engineering that car. Be interesting to see what that looks like when that comes out. And, of course, I got to think, with that Ace Man coming out, is that going to be competition for the five-door Mini hatch? Because I think everybody got out of the Clubman and started buying the Countryman. That's what killed off the Clubman. You either went down a little bit and bought a five-door hatch, or you went up a little bit and bought the Countryman. I'm kind of wondering where that Aceman's going to fit in line with the five-door hatch. They may end up just competing against themselves for market share, so I guess we'll just have to wait. See how that all shakes out, huh? So that wraps up the roundup for the lineup. Try saying that fast five times. Hell, I couldn't say it once slow. So before we start chatting about the upcoming Mini Takes the State stuff, let's talk about the developments that are going on over at the home office at the Mini BMW headquarters. A little bit of drama going on over there, maybe? Hang tight. We're going to take a quick break, and we will come back and talk about Stefan replacing Stephanie. Be interesting. Hang tight, guys. Okay, as promised, we are back. Let's look into a little shakeup at Mini headquarters. Apparently, BMW and Mini does change the leadership at Mini Helm every now and then, and that was another one of them. Stephanie Wurst is going to be leaving. She's only been in her job for a little over 2 years. She took over in February of 22. Fast forward to May of 24. What is that? A little over 2 years? Now, there's no real definitive answer given as to why she's stepping down. She is still staying with the Mini brand, so they didn't, like, totally shit can her, and now she's on the outside looking in, so I guess that's a good thing for her. Apparently, she's taking a role somewhere else within the BMW side of things. Stefan Richmond is the guy coming in. He also has got a ton of financing and BMW and automotive lineage behind him. So it'll be interesting to see what he brings to the table. So here is the official BMW group press release about Stephanie's departure. It sounds like a lot of fluff, but anyway, you give it a listen here. Here's what they say. It says, in recent years, Stephanie Wurst has strategically successfully focused the British premium brand Mini on new markets and target groups, and in particular on electric mobility and digitalization. She has also developed the International Mini Sales Organization into a sustainable and customer-focused sales model and has played a decisive role in the phased introduction of Mini direct sales in China and Europe. And they go on to say, Wurst built on the Mini brand's strong heritage, while at the same time realigning it for the future. That could be questionable, but that's me, not BMW, by the way. They continue with the rollout of the new Mini family, the brand is currently at a high point in its 65-year history. Again, a little editorializing. That can be debated from a lot of us enthusiasts, I believe. But, alas, they continue. Three models with strong characters, the Mini Cooper, Mini Aceman, and the Mini Countryman, embody the digitalization of products and services, electrification of the brand, and Mini's signature go-kart feeling. Kind of get the idea they threw that last part in and go, oh shit, yeah, we are kind of a fun brand. I don't know, that sounds like a lot of lip service or maybe spin doctoring, I'm not really sure. I did some more research and I saw a lot of things about BMW looking at the Mini brand and saying that they're working on diversity and inclusion and all the great things where we sit around and hold hands and sing Kumbaya. And it's all designed to make us all feel better about everything and better in the world. But what does it really do for the Mini brand? And is that even a purpose of an automotive manufacturer? Well, having said all that, it sounds like Mini is trying to be the worldwide leader on green initiatives, if you will. Everything I was reading, it's all about electrification and mobility, sustainability, eco-friendly, and those are cool buzzwords, they really are, and it may play to boardrooms, and it gives the higher-ups, I'm sure, a warm, fuzzy feeling, but at the end of the day, is it going to sell cars, and is it going to sell cars to the point where it's profitable? Don't get me wrong, I understand how Mini has to make money. I mean, it would be great if they would make cool cars that all of us love, but the end result, if they're not profitable, they're going to go away, and we're going to lose everything that we like about the brand. I don't think BMW is going to let that happen, but I don't know. It sure looks like they're going off in a direction that wasn't really envisioned back in the rollout of the brand back in 2002 and all those early first-gen days, you know? But as they say, the times, they're a-changing. So I'm not ready to wave the white flag of surrender and start shoveling dirt on the grave of the brand. Hopefully Stefan can come in there and revitalize things. I do think it's funny that, you know, just 2 weeks after the Aceman's released, and with all the criticism that the new Countryman and the new Cooper's getting, that Stephanie is, quote-unquote, stepping down. I don't know. It just seems funny timing. But again, BMW has got a history of moving people in and out on a fairly regular basis. Let's welcome Stefan in, see what he does. I think there's still a lot of exciting things to come in the Mini world. Not sure electrification is one of them, but, you know, we'll play that part by ear. And you know, as long as the JCW is still being made and into production, you know, the horsepower is going to be there and they're going to make some fun cars for us. And I do remember a lot of pushback when the F56 cars came out. So that turned out pretty well, didn't it? So, you know, Stephanie, good luck. Stefan, welcome aboard. You know, it would be kind of cool to get him over from Mini Takes Estates. We've had BMW Mini execs on Mini Takes Estates before. Would be cool to get him over, although he really doesn't take position until the 1st of August. So, and it will be done by then. But you got to admit, that would be one hell of an indoctrination into the Mini community, wouldn't it? But either way, it'll be interesting. We'll keep an eye on it. I'll keep scouring the interwebs and see what I can find, and I'll report back to you guys later. Other than that, hang tight. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll chat about a few more things. So sit tight, enjoy the music. I'll be right back. See, I told you we'd be back. Yeah, so much for that. Anyway, hey, look, let's talk real quick about Mini Takes the States. Still coming up. Still in July. Still from Albuquerque up to Seattle. Let's talk about some of the Facebook groups that are set up for Mini Takes the States. Just jump on Facebook, search MTTS or Mini Takes the States, and you'll see all kinds of groups pop up. Some of them that I kind of keep an eye on is the Mini Cooper Camper Group. Those guys, I'm telling you what, they are dedicated. You know, a lot of us go to our hotel, turn on the AC, flop down on the bed, and go to sleep right after dinner. Yeah, those camper guys, they got to put up their tent. If it's hot, they're going to be hot. If it's raining, they're going to be wet. A handful of them tow the little teardrop campers, which are so cool, by the way. But I don't know how much they get to enjoy the really twisty times, you know, towing one of those little campers around with them. There's the Mini Takes the States First Run Newbies. If you are a first-timer to Mini Takes the States, or really, if you've run a few times, it doesn't hurt to pop into the First Run Newbies page and just, you know, get a little refresher. Oh, I need to bring these, or hey, don't forget that. There's a lot of good tips in there. So that's the Mini Takes the States First Run Newbies page. One group that Lori up in Maryland started, the Mini Takes the States 24 Solo Drivers. If you're doing Mini Takes the States and it's just you in the car, that's a very important group that you need to be in. One of their mottos is, you may be by yourself, but you're not alone. I might not have that exactly right, but it's pretty damn close, and you get an idea there. I think they were talking about adopting a buddy system, you know, where, you know, hey, I'll look out for you, you look out for me. I think that's a great idea. I really think kind of all of us that have, you know, two or more in our minis, you should kind of take a look and keep an eye on the solo drivers. You know, it's not like we don't keep an eye on everybody anyway. We do. Here's a funny story. Me and my son did the Hot Rod Magazine Hot Rod Power Tour back in 05. And on the kickoff thing, there's a big stage and there's 5,000 hot rods getting ready to leave Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And the MC says, hey, you're on this with 5,000 of your best friends. Sound familiar? Kind of sounds familiar, doesn't it? He said, if you break down on the side of the road, you're going to have at least 100 of your best friends stop and see if they can help. But the flip side of that, and this is mainly for you guys out there, if you pull off side of the road to take a pee, you're going to have 100 of your best friends stop and take a pee with you more than likely. All right, maybe that's a hot rod thing and not so much a mini thing, but when nature calls, right? And one of the groups that I pay a lot of attention to, I'm in there a bunch, I'm also one of the moderators on there, the Mini Takes the States Going All the Way group. That is a cool group. That's for folks that are doing from start to finish. Tons of great information in there. And one thing that I like, so they are doing the Mini Takes the States feeder routes. So if you're leaving like we are from Virginia, there's a group leaving from Florida, group leaving from Northeast, group from Wisconsin. They've got planned stops and they're saying, hey, if you want to tag along with us, tag along with us. We'll get you out to Albuquerque. We're going to be in this city this night. We're going to be in that city that night. We're going to be in the next city the next night. And just tag along, join us along the caravan anywhere you want to join in at. And we kind of all motor together. That's kind of like a Mini Takes the States before Mini Takes the States. And kind of like the solo group. It beats the hell out of making all the way across the country by your damn self, right? Now, a couple of folks have asked me how I do my hotel picks. You know, we've been doing Mini Takes the States since 08, and we've been putting on mini runs since probably around 08 for our local club here, including a run I did from Maine to Florida, and we did another run, Mini Takes Appalachia, week-long run through the mountains of West Virginia, Virginia, Tennessee, North Carolina, and Kentucky. And I've always done pretty damn well, if I do say so myself, picking my hotels. And I'm very particular because after a hot day of driving, last thing you want to do is get to a crappy-ass motel with hard beds, bed bugs, right on the interstate, right near a train track. We did that one time. near an airport, or just an in general run-down hotel. So here's Dale's trick to picking hotels, okay? So I use two big sites, Google, obviously, and TripAdvisor.com. Now, TripAdvisor used to be the go-to site for hotels and restaurants and things to do in cities. And I think Google's kind of bypassed that a little bit, but there is still a ton of information that you can gain from TripAdvisor.com. For example, you can pull up a city like Albuquerque, and you can search for hotels, and they have a little map option that you can search and see where all the hotels are on the maps. You can do that on Google Maps, too. But you have the luxury of searching hotels by ratings on TripAdvisor. I personally won't stay in a hotel with less than a 3.5 bubbles. They do bubbles there. I prefer 4 bubbles or higher. And I also look at the reviews. I'll only look at reviews going back about 6 months. Because reviews from 3 years ago, that hotel can change a lot. It can get a lot better in a year. It can get a lot worse in a year. Sometimes less times than that, you know? But then once I found something I like on TripAdvisor, I go over to Google. And I also check their ratings on Google's. And again, I'll go back. I'll always check the most recent, and I'll go back maybe 6 months, because I do think in today's day and time, you'll see more reviews on Google than you do on TripAdvisor, which is sad because, like I said before, TripAdvisor was a great clearinghouse of information once upon a time. And when I look at my Google reviews, I want a 3.7 at least. Again, I prefer a 4 or higher. And over on TripAdvisor, they have like 5 ratings. An excellent, very good, average, poor, and friggin' pathetic, or whatever the one is. So I throw out the middle ones. I take the top 2 ratings and the bottom 2 ratings, add the 2 higher and the 2 lower together, and I want at least a 5-to-1 ratio of the good reviews to the bad reviews. So if there's 5 bad reviews, I want at least 25 good reviews. I want a hotel that I can count on getting a good night's sleep in, because there's nothing worse than being tired and not getting a good night's sleep. Now, another thing on picking the hotels, you know, I love watching when Minnie first announces the cities and everybody runs out and grabs hotels in those cities. And then when they announce where the Rise and Rally events are, everybody changes those hotels and gets hotels close to the Rise and Rally locations. And I've never understood that, because you're going to be in the car all day driving. What's another 10 or 20 miles to get to that Rise and Rally location in exchange for a nice, quiet hotel in a nice suburban setting, away from interstates, away from train tracks, away from airports? There's a lot to be said for that. Look for business parks, by the way. If you find hotels in a business park, they are usually really quiet. So that's a big plus there. You know, for me, when it comes to hotels, I don't mind spending $30 or $40 more a night if I know it's safe and I know it's comfortable. Now, talking about safety, one thing I've never run into in all of my previous MTTSs, or even the local runs I've set up, is the reports I've seen from Washington hotels. And this goes for Spokane, Yakima, and Seattle. I am seeing more thefts and break-ins of cars for those 3 stops than I have anywhere else on any mini run I've ever done or set up. So when you're checking your hotels, don't just, oh, that looks pretty, or this is right off the interstate, or hey, I'm saving $50 on this hotel. Look, you save $50 and you come out and somebody's busted your window out and stole your luggage or your radar detector or your GPS or whatever. First of all, don't leave that stuff in your car. Some people do. But you come out to a busted window, now you got to deal with that as well as everything else. So do your due diligence checking your hotel safety in the crime reports in that area. It can save you a whole lot of headaches later on down the road. Personally, I don't want to see anybody get their cars broken into. And several many Texas states ago, you had a group of many guys from Europe. They were doing a round the world in their mini. And they've been all through Europe, through Russia, through Asia. They shipped the car to California. I think the second night there in California, somebody breaks a window and steals their laptop out of their car. You know, damn it, they've made it around the world, okay? And their first 1 or 2 nights in the United States, they get their shit broken into in California. That's just absolutely a terrible situation. And how does it bode for us? They went through some terrible countries, and it had that happen here in the States, you know? So when you pick your hotels, pick safe ones. Don't worry about a dollar. Pick your safe hotels. And while we're wrapping up our Mini Texas States content for this episode, next show, we'll be talking about two-way radios. If you don't have two-way radios, if you haven't been on a mini run, you really need two-way radios. You get to hear all the banter back and forth between cars. If there's a pothole in the road or traffic coming up or whatever, it's going to get mentioned by the run leader, so you'll be able to hear that. The bigger runs, like many Texas states, we were leaving Charlotte Motor Speedway, I don't know when it was, maybe 2014, 2016. Somebody I'm sure knows out there. But the directions were wrong. It's like the third direction out of the racetrack said go left instead of going right. Luckily, some folks knew the area, and we all got on our radios, and we all got going the right direction, at least the ones that had radios. The ones that didn't, we were kind of flagging them down. Hey, come this way. Follow us. That's wrong. So your two-way radios are important. It's great to stay in connection. You don't always have cell coverage in some of these real remote areas, but your radios will still work. But you got to have the right radio. So don't forget to tune in next time. Get all your radio info so you buy the right ones and don't waste money. We've had folks buy the wrong radios before, and you don't want to do that. So tune into that next episode. Going to be some good info. As for me, in this episode, that about wraps it up. So once again, I want to thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate it every time you let us borrow your ears. Hopefully you're getting a little bit of information and some entertainment out of the show. Don't forget to subscribe and give us a 5-star review on whatever podcast app you're listening to us on. That'll help us grow the show and tell your friends about it. Make a Facebook post, Twitter, Instagram, whatever they have, TikTok. Just give the CooperCast a little mention out there somewhere. Help us grow. As for me, I'm Dale Blankenship, and we will talk to you next time on the CooperCast, the fun podcast for you, the folks out there in the mini motoring community. Till next time, motor safely, and don't forget to wave.